And hello, party people. Welcome to the DC Talk podcast. I'm your host, Jesus Heredia. And tonight we are going to go live coverage of San Diego Comic-Con. And so we're going to have a guest here. Hopefully he's calling in soon. We'll be around for another 30 or 40 minutes. So if you want to call in, our dial-in number is 516-418-5445. Again, that number is 516-418-5445. We could call in. We're just going to talk about Comic-Con. You know, the good, the bad. Of course, Marvel was not there this year, as also a few years ago they decided not to come. And, you know, they're touch and go. So sometimes they want to make their splash, and sometimes they want to save it for the Disney crowd. So I know the Disney convention is coming up soon. Been looking at a lot of videos on YouTube in regards to the San Diego Comic-Con cosplay. Each year, these people, these very talented people, just come back with, like, they just top themselves every single time. We see from Chewbacca, from, of course, the Batman 66, Leia, Slave Leia will always be there in any incarnation. I've seen it from dogs to men to even kids, which was a little scary. It was kind of those moments where you did a double take. You're like, huh? What's going on here? Spider-Man is always a welcome to the convention. I remember my son dressed up as Spider-Man for WonderCon. And, of course, Star Wars, any Stormtrooper. One that I noticed this year was a blow-up Donald Trump cosplayer, and he had the diaper on, and I think he was trying to mimic the Donald Trump balloon. All right, let's see. We have a caller now. Hey, this must be our special guest. All right, from area code 858. Who is this?
Hey, this is Cesar. How are you, Cesar?
What up, Cesar? How's it going, sir?
Doing well.
All right, a little backstory between us. For those of you guys listening right now, me and Cesar, we go back way back to junior high. And that was how many moons ago? Too many to count.
Oh,
right?
My gosh. At least like four.
And even back then, we were the comic enthusiasts, and I'm sure we still are as much as we can these days. But even back then, I remember. Yeah. I remember, you know, you sharing your X-Men comics, and you guys, you know, it was so funny. You and Joe were the first ones to introduce me to, like, real hardcore Marvel, you know, because everybody knew Spider-Man and all that. But when it came down to, like, Punisher, Wolverine, I was just being schooled. Because all I knew was DC. And then when you're like, wait, your characters kill people? What's going on? So, yeah. So, just a little backstory. We go way back. And then now, of course, Cesar has been participating with Comic-Con for the last... How many years now have you been doing this volunteering?
So, it's a full year, but I've done... three conventions with Comic-Con International. So I did San Diego last 2017. I did WonderCon 2018, and then San Diego 2018.
Wow! Yeah. I mean, kudos to you, because you know what you see every day.
Yeah, I feel really fortunate, because not everybody who inquires to volunteer to work doesn't get chosen. So
yeah. So let me ask you that
window.
Let me ask you that. Well, what was the spark for you? What made you say, you know what, this year I'm gonna sign up. I'm gonna go do it. I'm gonna volunteer and help the cause, and you know, make the event nice and pleasant for others, you know, that are traveling so far away. What was that spark for you?
Oh, it wasn't for lack of trying. I tried. I think when I moved to San Diego about 13 years ago, I tried every single year. And I always got the thank you for your interest, but it's full, like, year after year.
Oh, I'm sure.
And then I got interviewed once. It was interesting. So there was an opening for the programming and talent department. And apparently there was one opening, but like 30 people applied. So it just became like the right place, right time, and who you knew. So, again, all the lines were in order for me to do this. So to give you some background, so my wife, Jenny, her boss actually works in the planning committee for Comic-Con. And as part of his work with the planning, he gets provided like these personal access codes that people are able to, that he's able to give them to friends and family. You use a code to buy a pass, like for a singular day. And it just happens to be the 2017 year that I didn't get any passes even for Sunday. So I just casually asked if he had any personal access codes that he could let me use. And he said, I'll do you better. We're starting a new department called line management and need help. And I said, wonderful, I'll do it. And I signed up as a volunteer. I was confirmed as a volunteer. And then it just happens to be that her boss knew one of the top executives of Comic-Con who was overseeing the new department. And then he said, he just wrote me an email and said, hey, I heard so-and-so refer to you. Do you mind working for pay? And I said, yes, please.
Okay.
Almost immediately. And at that point, like, I think within the matter of like 24 hours, I went from being a volunteer to being on payroll.
That's great. I mean, come on. Now you're getting paid to be there. How about that?
Right. And that's the thing. Like, and I think what wound up happening is that I had a wonderful experience that, I mean, when everybody else around you is like traveling from different parts of the world, I'm being paid to be there, and like I couldn't have thought of a better way of doing it.
So you said you did 2 years, right, or 1 year?
It's 12 months that I've been with the Comic-Con International.
Oh, but you did multiple cons. Okay. So out of the three which one's the best so far? Experience wise,
so here's the thing. So experience is the 2018 con had really memorable moments for me.
Uh-huh.
But the 2018 WonderCon, I feel that there's more access to industry people. So like if you're looking to meet somebody from a panel or meet like an actor,
and the prices are still cheap, so it's still accessible. Yeah. No, I totally agree.
Right, I mean, you can even buy, like, a three-day pass going into, like, a month into WonderCon. So if you're looking at getting all of the benefits of seeing your favorite illustrator or your artist or your writer or your actor, going to WonderCon will give you more access to them. So I'll give you a good example. For those of your followers that may be following, like, the Batman storyline, Scott Snyder, who is more famous for Batman recently and kind of cementing the Dark Days and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
He literally walked up to the door that I was working at and like, nobody knew who he was. I mean, I knew who he was and he said, oh, do you mind if I stand here? And I said, Mr. Snyder, absolutely. And he looked at me and he smiled and I said, I know who you are because you do realize you're the coolest guy in the universe right now. And he laughed and shook my hand. And so it's like little things like that, like as a comic book fan, like having those experiences has been really cool.
Yeah. Well, since you're name dropping, what about the other one, Mr. Lee? Give us that little scenario there.
Interesting. Yeah. So what ends up happening is, so we're the line management division has like multiple like sub departments. So specifically I work outside of Hall H. So, after people are camping out and are ready to get into the big auditorium, I'm the last person they see before they walk in through the doors.
Okay. So you see the tired faces, the faces that have given up, that have been sleeping out there all night.
Yeah.
The BO, the mouth breathing.
It was bad this year, actually.
It wasn't bad this year. They got the memo.
No.
All right. So then you're at the door.
Yeah, so I'm at the door. So what ends up happening is where I'm positioned outside of Hall H, to my right are all the side doors that are the exits to Hall H. So whenever the auditorium exits out, like we basically manage the flow of pedestrian traffic so nobody gets hurt. People are able to walk and get back into the exhibit floor, the different parts of the convention. And I've been following Jim Lee. I mean, he's my favorite illustrator. You know this.
Oh, yeah. He's really active in social media, too.
Yeah. So what winds up happening is I was following his Instagram and noticed that he only had, like, two signings at the DC booth. which was like Thursday and Friday, and I thought, oh, he's not going to be here on Saturday. And for whatever reason, like, as being part of line management, like, you still get a break, so I changed my shirt and I walked into the convention floor to try to get autographs, and something told me to bring this poster that my wife had found as we were moving, like, out of our storage unit into, like, just kind of, like, de-cleansing our clutter. And she said, what's this box? And said, I don't know. And she opened it. And basically, for all the comic book fans out there, it was the Diamond Distributor exclusive wanted poster that was done for that Extinction Agenda storyline.
You should definitely Google it. What should they Google when they type it in? What should they, so they could see a sample?
They should Google wanted poster Extinction Agenda. And then that will pull up the poster. See, and Jesus doesn't remember this, but I remember there was one time with Jesus, Joe, and I went to a grand opening at a comic book store in Lakewood.
With the Batmobile?
The three of us walked in.
Oh, that was a different time.
Yes. No, that was it.
Oh, that was it? Oh, okay.
And, yep, so we walked into the store, and the comic book owner, he pointed to us and said, look what I got. So basically, he got a signed wanted poster from Diamond.
Oh, nice.
That were only given to certain distributors.
Nice.
And he was raffling a spare one. And I entered the raffle.
Oh,
it was like a dollar. And what winds up happening is, this is something I don't even know if he's not even telling you this, but I got a call telling me that I had won the raffle.
Wow. No, so, I don't remember. So
this is to kind of let you know, I was 13, I'm now 42. So literally this is now like 30, I can't do math now.
Yeah.
At least 30 years in the making, right?
You can skip all that.
So this is like 30 years in the making, like I'm holding on to this poster.
Yeah.
So 2017, the Comic-Con, like, so this is now the first year that I'm getting paid with Comic-Con. I bring the wanted poster to the artist gallery. And I run into Scott Williams, and Scott Williams, who is Jim Lee's inker, I take out the poster and I ask him to sign it. He looks at me and he says, where did you get this? And I said, well, I told him the story about the raffle and such.
Right.
So you've been holding on to this for close to like over 25 years? And I said, yes, because my wife found it for me.
Yes.
And then he said, I'm going to tell you a story. He said, I was in the New York office at Marvel working on an X-Men book, and Jim Lee runs up to him and basically says, Scott, drop everything. I need you to work on this. So he's telling the story about how he had to ink this thing like at the last minute.
Oh, wow.
And then at that point, Scott Williams and Jim Lee basically are now running to a FedEx shop or like a UPS store.
Yeah.
Down like Fifth Avenue, and they barely make the deadline for it to ship.
Amazing.
And then he says, that was it. I've never seen it again. Because actually, I take it back. I've only seen four. And of the four I've seen physically, as I'm touching this one, yours is the most pristine condition that I could tell.
So I'm sure you're going to...
Because I am honored.
Uh-huh.
I'm holding out to this for myself. So Scott Williams signs it. But what was interesting about this is that... So Alex Sinclair, who is Jim Lee's colorist, like it's Alex Sinclair and Richard Friend and Jim and Scott Williams, who work with Jim Lee mostly. They all sit together. Alex Sinclair looks at the poster and he yells, this is not preview night. Like he yells, he says, everybody check this out. He has a wanted poster. And almost immediately, like everybody around me gets out from where they're standing. They're sitting like in their booth and they're now surrounding me. Because they had never seen the wanted poster.
Wow. What a moment. Only at Comic-Con.
Yeah, so it was a funny thing because Alex and Claire were saying, like, only at the con could this happen.
Yeah.
And then he said, did you win the raffle to meet Jim? And I said, that's something I'm waiting to do. So I'll get to the Jim Lee part. So what ends up happening is on Saturday of that con, I noticed that Mark Silvestri was doing a signing, and I thought, the line's going to be long. And it wasn't. I just kind of walked up to the table and I showed him the poster, and he couldn't believe that it was real.
Wow.
He actually had his personal assistant to authenticate it, and then he finally looked at it and said, oh, Scott Williams signed it, I'm going to sign it too.
Look at that.
He says, because Scott doesn't sign anything that isn't authentic, so then Mark Shereshu signs it off the bat.
Wow.
So then it goes back into,
so like, the that just opens sleeve. The gates then, you know, to,
right.
you know, also so authenticate, yeah.
For everybody else.
And tell me you took pictures so while they were signing to you have proof.
I didn't.
That they touched, you didn't.
Did it. Okay. No,
I would have been like, yeah, hold on, let me get my iPhone out so I have proof you guys signed it.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So what is happening is this is now fast forward to this year. So on Saturday of this last crunch, so it was the Warner Brothers panel, and it was emptying out. And like the amount of people that just kind of came out, like it felt like half the hall, if not the majority of the hall, had emptied out after Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
And people were kind of raving about the Aquaman like portion of it, like, oh, it's going to be amazing.
So you were outside when they screened it, right?
Right.
Okay. Did you hear any big roar or a big ruckus when that was playing, or business as usual?
Well, so it's interesting because I'm not allowed to look at anything. Like, it's really weird how they project everything. I'm looking, like, I'm mouth facing out.
Yeah.
And we just kind of hear a roar and people clapping.
Okay.
And then out of nowhere, I see Jim Lee, and I know who Jim Lee is because he's a short guy.
Yeah, you can't miss
and
him.
And he can't move. Like, he literally can't move.
Are you stuck?
And then I kind of, like, he's stuck in this mass of people. So
yeah.
I take out my hand and I said, Mr. Lee, because all my life I've been waiting to shake your hand. May I please shake your hand? And he said, absolutely. I says, you look like something's wrong. Is everything okay? And he said, I'm going to the DC booth and I'm late and I'm not. And I was supposed to do a surprise appearance. And I looked at him and I said, come with me.
There you go.
So I grabbed him from the mass of people, get him into, like, past, like, the barricade.
You're lucky he didn't say, you got me, who's got you?
So we're not walking, and basically I'm literally yelling, Jim Lee, I'm walking Jim Lee through the floor, please make way. And as soon as I said that, it was almost like parting the Red Sea.
Oh, yeah.
Because people then started moving.
Nice.
So then I get him into the exhibit floor, and then I said, Mr. Lee, do you need me to walk to the DC booth? He said, actually, I can manage it from here because I could lower my hat and navigate through.
Right.
And he said, you know, what's your name? I said, oh, my name is, you know, Seth. And he said, is there anything I could do for you? And I said, Mr. Lee, actually, there is one thing. And I take out the wanted poster.
Oh, my God. How are you carrying this without having it, like, bent or ripped? I mean, are you carrying the suitcase? What's going on here?
Well, I'm carrying a backpack, and I have, like, a hardcover book.
Oh, good.
Right in the middle.
Good, because this whole time I'm like, so, how is he carrying this?
Yeah. And it basically, it's in, like, two envelopes before I pull everything out.
Good. It's protected.
So he sees this, and he sees Mark Silvestri's signature, and he smiles. And he looks at me and he says, this is the only poster that's framed and hanging in my house from my X-Men days.
Wow.
And he says, because I'm going to sign it right now. And he signs it. And he takes my hand against this. He said, Seth, thank you so much for all your help. And that's it. He just left.
That's great.
And that was my Jim Lee moment.
There you go. There you go. Everybody's got to have a Jim Lee moment. That's awesome. That is great.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was mine. He was a totally nice guy.
Yeah, and, you know, we got a lot of the good. Come on, Caesar, we got to get some dirt. Any bad, like, you know, was there any fights, any cutters in line? Anybody vomit from the heat? what happened? Give us the bad.
I'll give you some of the – so here's some of the ugly. The one thing I'm just going to tell the people listening, everybody who's working at Comic-Con, like, treat them nice. Because they're working long hours.
Yeah.
And some of them don't even get to see the benefits of the panels or anything.
Simple as that. Just respect.
So, or just be kind. You know, a simple thank you. If they're telling you to not walk a certain direction, it's because they're probably protecting you to not go there.
How about that? They don't want you to get run over.
Right. So, for instance, like I mentioned, I was navigating the traffic pedestrian flow out of Hall H into the exhibit area.
Mm-hmm.
And people get really, really just anxious and upset when somebody decides to jump literally a metal barricade and a green net. So he's already jumped two barricades and a planter. And I just casually walk up to the person. I said, sir, can I help you?
Mm-hmm.
And the person said, oh, I didn't know that I couldn't be here. I said, so you couldn't tell past two barricades and the planter that you just jumped over that you couldn't be here.
Huh?
He said, well, where do I go? I said, well, you're not supposed to be here. You need to go around.
Yeah, I would have been like,
so the person got so the person got mad and basically said that I wasn't clearly communicating why I couldn't be there, and that next time he saw me, he was going to basically punch me in the face and
Really?
Right. So then basically at that point, he says it in front of the security guard.
Wow. Tough guy.
So there. I basically look at the security guard and I said, well, this person just slapped me with physical harm.
Uh-huh.
This person, I no longer feel safe in my workspace. I now need to remove him from the convention.
There you go.
So if you say something to somebody and make them feel unsafe in their workspace, and the likelihood of you getting your badge taken away and never asked to return, it's going to be pretty likely.
Wow.
So, and the other thing that was interesting is, like, kind of the allude to, like, the bad people try to counterfeit badges. And what's interesting is...
Oh, yeah. How good were they this year?
Some of them, I think, they weren't that successful because I had another colleague who worked... There's something called the portals, and the portals are basically the areas where you scan in your badge and it lights green and then you scan out. So there's a purpose to it because it's keeping track with how many people are in the convention area, how many people should be in the rooms.
Okay.
So what would happen is people would counterfeit their badge and then they would scan into a panel, but then that same badge would then try to get to a different room.
Ooh.
And then basically it deactivates both badges.
Ooh, like because it cancels out.
The system, then you, right, like you're in two different parts of the convention floor. How is that possible?
Yeah.
And so
then people will get upset. Why isn't it working?
So I was basically talking about how, like, people counterfeit badges and, they know, like, I think what wound up happening is during 2017, somebody had counterfeited the badges for the Saturday Hall H panel.
Ooh.
And about 350 people were kept out of Hall H. So,
what time did you start your day on Saturday?
So I started my day 12:30, but so he actually no, I started my day 11:30. But something that I think your listeners will probably appreciate will end up happening is I was working Hall H during the day, and then once the exhibit floor kind of like wrapped up, I had been transitioned over to handing out wristbands. So okay. I saw the whole thing. Like I see how the wristbands are handed out.
Okay.
Like the whole night, like so. It's a really interesting process. So
for someone that's listening, that's going to go to Hall H next year, what advice do you have for them?
Mm-hmm. My advice is, you need to line up as soon as possible to, like, the day before you, you want to see. Like, if you have like an interest to go into a panel on Thursday. But you don't have preview night, I would recommend them getting their passes ahead of time if they're able to, or get them that day on Wednesday and then camp out. Because literally, and this happened for the last couple of years, but behind Hall H, there's the experiences or the activations, and Adult Swim is usually the activation where people line up for the next day.
Wow.
What was happening this year, though, is that people were lining up 2 days ahead of time.
No.
And people were just kind of self-regulating themselves as to who was in line and in what order.
Wow.
So I would.
That's hardcore. Two days? So now I got to line up two days ahead of time? Oh, my God.
Well, so I don't want to mislead your listeners.
Start now.
I think we'll want.
We're trying to talk them off the ledge here.
90 seconds.
I don't determine the length of the line. So, for instance, I was interacting with some attendees on Thursday that were trying to get into a panel on Friday, and they didn't get in line until about 8:30 p.m., and they got wristbands for the next day.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I'm going to recommend is you don't have to stay there overnight. Once you have your wristband,
60 seconds.
Your hotel room, but as long as you're back in line by 7:30 a.m.,
yeah,
into that Hall H line, you're pretty much guaranteed a spot to go in.
Even if you're at the back of the line?
Yep, because as long as you're in line by the 7:30 a.m. cutoff,
yeah,
and you have a wristband, you're in.
Okay. Yeah, that's hardcore, man. Oh my god, I know, yeah, I did that. I did that a couple of years back, and it was hard, man. I was on the sidewalk. All, you know, like, have you seen it? You probably saw them this year. They were like all curled up, like homeless people, and I'm like, I'm paying for a $500 room, and I'm here on the sidewalk. I was just pulling my hair. Yeah. Oh, I did it like 2 or 3 years in a row, and I'm like, after the last one, I said, that's it. I am done. I'm like, thank God for the internet, which was great because we saw it at the luxury of our house, and we saw all the trailers that Hall H had, and I know they had like special clips, which we didn't get to see, but you know, eventually you'll get to see them. Wonder Woman, those clips popped up on the internet a couple hours after, and it was great to see her at the mall.
Yeah, I mean, they're released within a couple of hours. Who did you see her at the mall? Who did you see?
Oh, no, the clips that they showed for Wonder Woman during their panel. It's her fighting two thugs in a mall, like back in the 80s.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So my Wonder Woman experience, which is weird because it's always like a degree of separation.
Right,
so last year during the 2017 con, it was basically on Saturday, and it was leading into the Warner Brothers panel because I think they were closing out that Saturday.
Yeah.
And so remember, the strength of the panels and when they're scheduled determines like how fluid the audiences are for getting into Hall H.
Yeah.
So last year, because Warner Brothers was on Saturday and people were getting their wristbands, we only let 72 people in. Whoa. Who didn't have wristbands. To
Whoa,
get into,
you gotta
college.
Be kidding me!
No that joke, 72 intense. People.
Oh my god!
But this year, because Warner Brothers was in the morning and people were getting their wristbands and they did their thing, all the DC people who were like DC like fans got to see the Warner Brothers panel, and then they emptied out the hall, so it allowed all the Marvel people.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, and the Marvel
to do Deadpool.
Now you think you would have got a bigger crowd for Hall H if Marvel was to show up that Saturday as well?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that the biggest disappointment was that Marvel wasn't going to be there. And
yeah.
The one thing that,
and I get it, the Disney convention that they have, that D23, I get it. You know, like, why do it over there when we could do it at ours? But, I mean, come on, it's Comic-Con! These are comic book characters.
What's interesting, though, is now that Disney has had such a strong investment in their properties.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They even like they regulate in the artist alley what the artists are able to sell.
Wait, what?
So there are Disney
like
reps.
Like they go through and check.
There's Disney reps. Yeah, they go through the artist alley.
No.
And they'll basically ask an artist, "I'm like, where's your license agreement?
No.
With Disney." So for instance,
does DC do
Mark
that?
Mark Wolfman is a really good example. What's that?
Does DC do that?
You know, I don't know if there's a Time Warner rep, but I do know that there's a Disney rep. And the reason I know that is because I've gotten pretty friendly with some of the old Wildstorm guys that are still in San Diego. So Ryan Benjamin, who is who illustrated Batman Beyond, and I think he's working on some other projects right now. With Marvel, told me that no, like actually, there's Disney reps, and they'll go through the artist alley and they'll say, "Show me your licensing agreement." And
Whoa.
I was like, "How serious is this?" Like, no, it's pretty serious. Like they'll shut you down. Like they will tell you cannot be here. They'll get security. They'll escort you out.
Whoa.
And so Marv Wolfman is a good example of this. So Marv Wolfman, he's most known for Teen Titans, Crisis on Infinite, like an Infinite Earths with George Perez. Like, he basically is a quintessential like co-writer of that new Teen Titans craze, like introduced Nightwing. So when I went to his table, I asked Mr. Wolfman. I was like, "Oh, Mr. Wolfman, do you have any of your Marvel work?" And he looked at me and says, "Well, because these were the only items that." Marvel was allowing me to license to reproduce.
Wow.
And I said,
how do you feel? You being a fan. Yeah. I was going to say, how do you feel? You being a really loyal fan of Marvel, you know, as far as I can remember. And then to hear that your fellow artists are being restrained like that. And I get it. You know, it's all business. It's all money. We all, they own it. But I mean, it kind of puts a bad taste in your mouth, doesn't it?
But it does. And I think what's harder is that a lot of these illustrators, that's the only way they're able to make their income.
Yeah.
I mean, these people travel from convention to convention to convention.
That's their pension
and
right there.
They're hoping to, I mean, they're hoping to break even. I mean, because if you're thinking about, like, travel, hotel stay, you don't get comp that.
No.
Because I was even talking to Ryan Benson. I was like, how does this work? Like, do you pay to have a table at the artist alley? And he said, sometimes, because if you're not considered, like, one of the a special announced guests, you're not being sponsored, which means you're paying for your table space, you're paying for your stay.
Yeah,
and, I mean, think about it. Yeah. I mean, there's so many cons throughout the year that, I mean, depending on where you're at in the country, will determine how lucrative the likelihood of you being able to do that.
It's crazy.
So I think it's sad, and I think it's important to support, the Convoke Legal Defense Fund and the HERE initiative to really support those aging artists. And it's really, I think for me, I was really sad because a lot of the older artists that I recognized from my younger days were really appreciative that I walked up to them, and they were very generous with providing me an autograph. And they're just like, you remember me? And I was like, yeah, like, I remember you did this, you did that. And because everything, I mean, the way we view illustration, the way we view animation, it's evolved considerably.
Yeah.
But there's some hidden gems in there. Like, for instance, like, people don't realize this, but Brittany Lee, who was the principal animator for the Frozen movie, she has a booth. And she did some amazing DC work that she was able to sell. So imagine, like, getting a DC print from a Disney animator.
Of course.
Like, the principal animator for Frozen. I mean, there's, like, things like that that happened. There's, like, Liana He, who also worked on Frozen and the Diamond Celebration events. She's in the Artist Alley. Who else is there that's up-and-coming? Sean Galloway. He's done a lot of really great work with Teen Titans. He's in the, like, become huge, if not already. Like, he's there. And again, these are all illustrators that are not on payroll.
Right.
They're literally making their money off these conventions.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
You know, sometimes walking through Artist Alley, you know, it's great to see the faces with the names and, you know, and their artwork. But then sometimes it's kind of a little sad because you're like, you know, what they're there for. They're there to sell. You know, yeah, they're there to tell you the good stories and stuff, but they're also there to make a buck, which, you know, of course, you know, this is their, like you said, this is their time to cash in on their artistry and, you know, keep them afloat and, you know, keep them busy. But sometimes, you know, it's kind of like, oh, man, I wish I could support all these guys. But, you know, sometimes you can't because sometimes their prices are a little too high. So, there's a lot of mixed feelings going through that area.
Well, touching on that point, like, I'll give you a good example. So Arthur Adams, I don't know if you remember him. So Arthur Adams, remember the work that he did on Fantastic Four? Like, he reunited the team, but it was like Wolverine, the Hulk.
Oh,
Ghost Rider, and there was like a fourth one. Do you remember that?
No.
That's the whole series. Well, if you type in Arthur Adams, everybody, you'll see like the seminal work that he's done. But when I was attending Comic-Con just as a normal patron, he was really generous with his fans. Like, he'd sell his cover recreations for like $10 a pop, right?
Uh-huh.
So he signed a deal. So what's happening now is that these artists are now signing deals with, like, these, I think, auction houses or, like, these bigger companies.
Okay.
To represent them. So a print that was selling for $10 during 2017 was selling for $30 to $50 at this con.
Whoa.
And it was the same exact print. So it's the same one that I got, and like and what's happening is they need to find a way to supplement their income.
Yeah, they do.
And what's happening also now is that people are now charging for their autographs.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, Bruce Timm is another good example. Bruce Timm, for folks who
was
Batman animated series, mm-hmm. Batman Mask of the Phantasm. So everything that we know about Warner Bros. Animation,
it's him.
It's all Bruce Timm.
Yeah.
So he sells his head sketches for $100 a pop. So black and white headsets.
Wow.
$100 a pop.
Wow.
That fool sells that every single day, every single year on
how many of those does he sell? Do you know?
He sells them all. And then on top of that, for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, he takes commissions. During those commission works, like, throughout the rest of the con. This is what he started doing. He starts charging for his autograph.
There you go.
So you have to realize, the moment, like, one of the lead guys, like, one of the main guys, once they start charging, everybody else starts following suit.
Of course.
So then what starts happening, Jay Lee starts charging, Humberto Ramos starts charging, Arthur Adams starts charging, Mike Pinola starts charging, Marguerite Bennett starts charging. Like, I'm telling you, like, it's now become one of those moments in the world, like, as a fan, you can't even go in there
Mm-mm.
asking for a simple autograph because they're going to charge you
You'll
for
be
the
broke.
Autograph.
You'll be broke. Yeah.
Case in point, last year, I spent $220 strictly on autographs.
Oh, my gosh.
On preview night. And at the end of it, I was like, what did I do?
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. like, and I was just, and I made a point this year that I was not going to.
Good. And then look at all the signatures you got this year.
Yeah. And again, it was because I knew their work and I was appreciative and I recognized their artistry. But it just, it's sad because it's now become, everything has a cost and people are willing to pay for it.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that window also is getting smaller, the Comic Con phase of that convention. As you know, all the movies and
right.
properties and toys and games, even the game sections have been blowing up lately. I remember that was a little corner in the pocket somewhere. Now they have their, you know, the big footprint on there on the convention floor. And, you know, if it's movie, comic book related, great. If it's just a regular game, I mean, come on, you guys have E3. It's like,
right,
really?
No, you're right.
And I get it, you know.
And I think it's kind of, it's definitely changed. It's definitely evolved.
It's definitely changed, yeah.
What's happening is even the type of animation that I'm seeing on the artist alley has become much more cartoony.
Yeah.
It's good to a certain point, but again, it's a hit or miss. Because I really feel that depending on where the illustrator lives in respect to the country, I mean, where your con's going to be, you're going to get stronger illustrators and storytellers.
Of course.
So the Midwest generates a lot of really strong illustrators that come out.
I agree.
Baltimore Comic Con, like if you can't afford New York, go to Baltimore.
Ooh.
That's the place to be.
Ooh, you heard it here first.
Because you're not dealing with the real estate. I mean, you're dealing with like the Maryland side of the house. I mean, it's 4 hours away from New York.
And it's all talent.
Baltimore.
That's the best part. It's all talent.
It's all talent.
All right. Well, that's great. Yep. We're going to wrap up this conversation with Ground Zero, as I called it this episode. Ground Zero, as we get the inside news as to, you know, what happened at the front gates of Hall H. And I felt like I'm already exhausted. That's how I felt like I was with you.
when you think about it, I mean, I was working like 11-hour days.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty exhausted.
It's insane. And you're here to talk about it, which is great. So here's the question. What's the next con for you?
Well, the next con for me, hopefully it's WonderCon.
All right. So and that's what, me, like October, November?
So March 29th to 31st.
Oh, March. Oh, yeah. When, I forgot. Around Easter time, yeah.
Right. And so what's happening is that the Comic-Con International people, they only bring like a small chosen group to work WonderCon. So if you excelled at your tour during Comic-Con, they will bring you in to only work WonderCon.
Oh, that's great.
So, like, our department has about, like, 15 people. Of that 15, they'll probably only bring about 6.
All right, cool. Well, do you want to give any last words to our listeners out there that were not able to make it this year? What advice do you have for next year?
My advice is if you're not able to get passes, it's okay. I mean,
so
try the smaller cons, like WonderCon, Long Beach City.
Yeah, and then even if you don't have tickets to Comic Con, there's so many activations outside. Like, you could just spend a whole day just outside. Yeah. There's, like, mazes. There's interactive. There's zombie runs. I mean, there's tons of stuff. And with that, we're going to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Cesar. And we'll talk again, all right?
Definitely. All right.
All right. Have a good night.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.